The Athletic.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is showtime. Please welcome the team of the Fulhamish podcast.
It's happened again. Yes, welcome to the Fulhamish podcast, your independent voice of Fulham FC. My name's Sammy James. Welcome to the show, brought to you by The Athletic UK, and how a win can change the mood on this podcast. Fickle, absolutely not us. Today we'll be discussing Fulham's 4-1 victory over Queen's Park Rangers. The boys from Shepherd's Bush sent back firmly with their tail between their legs. They may have been on form, but they were no match for Fulham yesterday in the West London Derby, with 3 second half goals sinking the hoops from W12. And it's a very happy podcast today, and I'm glad to say it. Jack Kelly is here. Hello.
Hello.
You're grinning from ear to ear.
Yeah, I haven't been on the podcast since Liverpool away last season. So happy to be here.
Oh my word. Jeez, I hadn't quite realised the significance. Whenever Jack Kelly is on, things go very, very well. Dan Cook, hello.
Hello, Sammy. How are we doing?
Yeah, not too bad, thank you. And Ben Jarman, hello.
Hello, Sammy James. I saw you yesterday. It's nice to speak to you 2 days in a row.
It is indeed. This is probably where we should start, actually. I have to apologise to you on the record for what happened yesterday. Do you want to explain to the listeners why I need to apologise?
Well, Sammy very kindly, in the first instance, lent me his dad's ticket for the game yesterday. Big Clive is out in Spain at the moment, enjoying himself. So he left me to look after Sammy for the day. So obviously I arranged to meet Sammy outside the ground. And obviously Sammy is too big time presenting Radio 1 to get there on time. So I was waiting outside the ground for the first, 10, 15 minutes and missed Mitrovic's goal. And then there I was, standing outside Craven Cottage, and I saw this clown running down Stevenage Road towards me going, "Have we missed anything?" yeah.
I did hear the roar of all three sides of the ground just as I was leaving Bishop's Park to get onto Stevenage Road. And to be honest, I was just happy because Fulham were 1-0 up. But yeah, a little bit annoyed. I am very sorry, Ben. Well,
no, it's fine.
My apology to you is letting you do the three-word reviews today. How about that?
Oh, you're so kind. So kind.
It's the least I can do.
I was going to do one. Obviously, I'm not on Twitter currently, and I was going to do one saying from at Ben Jarman saying Sammy was late. But as we've already covered this, I think we'll just dive straight in. And, I'm going to dive straight in actually with someone that is on the podcast now, and it's from Jack Kelly, who said, "Fuck your ambition," which is actually true because we are better than you.
Very nice.
Bo E. Farrell, Coach B. Farrell, says international break lifted, which I liked a lot. Paul Roberts said quickly past Rangers, and Alex Pure Power, who is a friend of the pod and actually a regular at Three Word Reviews, always seems to smash them, says it's happened again, and we retweeted all three of them because they were very, very good.
Yeah, very, very nice Three Word Reviews. Interested to see what becomes the podcast title today. All right, let's get into it then. Dan, it was the perfect, perfect tonic to what happened at Coventry a couple of weeks ago. A 4-1 defeat there. We kind of spent the international break licking our wounds. So to come back with an emphatic win over our neighbours, but also informed neighbours as well. They've been very, very good this season. Was absolutely what the doctor ordered.
Oh, absolutely. It was all round a great day, turn up. It's been horrific weather all morning. Walk into the cottage, sun comes out. It was an absolute picture at the cottage yesterday. It was beautiful. And I thought the atmosphere as well, I know we've been speaking about it quite a lot this season, but I thought the atmosphere yesterday was fantastic. I mean, especially in that second half in the Hammy end, it was a fantastic day, and it was quite nice actually having it as a lunchtime kickoff, because you're just walking on air for the rest of the day after that. It was a lovely feeling.
Yeah. Jack, there was several changes by Fulham, some of them enforced with the likes of Decadova Reed and Robinson not starting because of their international exploits. It certainly didn't show later in the game. Cavalera on the left wing was a bit of a surprise choice. But of course, I think the biggest news was Marek Rodak back between the sticks. Do you think it was the right decision? I thought he played pretty well yesterday, but didn't have an awful lot to do, bar the goal, really.
Yeah, I think we're in that sort of situation where, because you've got two very decent championship goalkeepers, if one makes a huge mistake or clanger, of which he did against Coventry, then that's always going to give the opportunity for Mike Redknapp to come in. And I thought it was the perfect game for Redknapp to come in, because if he gets a... Okay, he didn't get a clean sheet, but if he gets it in a good performance, he would be hyped up by the fans, and he would probably be the number one going forward, which I think he will be. And honestly, Redknapp didn't have much to do whatsoever all game. Great to see Tosin Adarabioyi back into the team. I think he is the main man at the back for us, and the reasons why we were so poor at Coventry is because I think we were missing his presence. John Mikel Seri back in midfield, beautiful, dictating play as always. And look, seeing Caviero was slightly frustrating, and I don't think he offered much before he went off, but what a day, what a fantastic derby, and QPR certainly went home upset.
Yeah, there was a comment from Jamie Faulkner, which wasn't really a question, so more than valid to put in here, but he just said, don't you feel safer and more relaxed with Rodak in goal, even though he didn't have much to do? And I do agree, and I said this on a previous pod, that I don't really know why I want Marek to start. There's not an awful lot between him and Gazzaniga, but I do just feel a little bit more comfortable with him in the net. Jarms, do you think it was the right call from Silva? It's been on the cards for about a month now, it feels like.
Yeah, I think it is the right decision. I think Coventry underlines the fact that Gazzaniga's always got a couple of mistakes lurking sort of within himself. And I think, just to go back onto Jamie Faulkner's statement, and I think to follow up yours, Sammy, I think that I was actually debating this with myself earlier. You know, I have a really fun time when I'm not on the podcast. It's just basically like, I think this thing with South American goalkeepers and goalkeepers that have had some sort of education in Spain, as Gazzaniga has, tend to have a very different style of goalkeeping to the ones you traditionally see in Europe and in the Premier League. And I think that they tend to punch more, and they tend to use their hands a lot more, or in some instances, say, of David De Gea, for example, like to use their feet a lot more than a traditional goalkeeper would. And I think that there's one thing to say, that our fan base just like to have the security that Rodak offers, in that he likes to catch quite a lot. He likes to command his box quite a lot. And I don't think he's scared to put himself about, where I think Gazzaniga is much more comfortable with punching away rather than trying to collect and take the hit. And I think that's just something that's maybe ingrained in him from such a long time, obviously being in Spain and also coming from Argentina. So I feel more comfortable with Rodak there, and I do think it's the right decision. I think he also offers some great communication. He's always shouting, whereas you never really saw that from Gazzaniga. But I think it is literally like paper thin between both of them. I think, as you said, Sam.
Yeah, there was a moment in the second half where Rodak was absolutely livid. I don't know if it was with Ream or with Robinson. It was certainly towards the left-hand side of Fulham's defence, and he was giving them an absolute bellowing. Dan, let's come on to the first goal, because Ben and I didn't see it. Lovely finish from Mitrovic. I have now watched it back. We saw it in the concourse at halftime and studied it as forensically as we could. They said it on the Quest show, just a classic championship goal. He brings it down fantastically with his chest. It doesn't look like there's an awful lot on. Dickie kind of is playing him the wrong way. And, you know, they said that Dickie was one of the best centre-halves of the championship. Well, even the great Rob Dickie can't deal with Mitrovic when he's on form like that.
No, they couldn't handle him at all yesterday. I thought Mitrovic was fantastic. And I thought the first goal, as brilliant as it was from him, I mean, it is really poor from Rangers. I mean, to allow a man who, going into the game, had 10 goals in 11 matches this season for us, to allow him that space in the box, he's brought it down and he's had no pressure coming from the other way. I mean, the way he swivels and finishes is fantastic, but yeah, it was really poor from Rangers. I thought, with the build-up to the goal as well, a note on that Seri ball, which was just delicious, in between that channel, over the top of their back line, out to Niskanen. I thought Jean-Michel Seri was fantastic yesterday, and there are a couple of moments in the game where he just showed his class with passes like that. But it was a great way to start, and it was prime Alexander Mitrovic in the championship.
Yeah, Jack, I felt like And I've said it on a few podcasts that Mitrovic has been in second gear this season. Even the Swansea game, I kind of felt like he wasn't at his absolute best. Yesterday, I think he's finally found top gear. Also on that Quest show, Colin Murray was debating with Ian Holloway as to how many goals he can score this season. I think Ian Holloway went with 34. Colin Murray said 35, although Holloway did pull his pants down and say, you were saying 40s until you bottled it on the show. I mean, look, it's 12 for 12. He's obviously not going to score 46 goals, even though that's what he's on target for. But you do have to wonder, Ivan Toney scored 31 last season. Could Mitrovic break it?
It's certainly doable. And the rate at which he's playing at the moment, it seems as though he could score every chance he gets. The thing I like about this goal is the fact that we saw something very similar to the game against Swansea, where he took it down and he took the extra touch and then scored. But the ball is looping from Odoi. It's not like a whipped crossing, and he's got that time and he's got that space, and I think Dickey should do better. But anyway, the point being is I think that Mitrovic could probably get over 30 this season. It's just whether he could stay fit, stay in the team. Hopefully nothing happens when he's with Serbia in November. So yeah, I mean Muniz is obviously going to be knocking on the door wanting to play a few games, but with Mitrovic on this form, there's no chance he's getting in the first team. Mitrovic right now is at the peak of his powers. He's 27. He's going to hit the prime of his career. And we're very lucky to have him in this division, hopefully firing us to the Premier League. He's just sensational. Such a presence. And we'll come on to the second goal, because those two goals basically just summed up Mitrovic. Taking it down, swivelling, shooting, and then, of course, a lovely glancing headed goal. I couldn't be more happy for the lad. He's absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, it just goes to show, like last season, that as much as Parker did find a way to play and to make us hard to beat, and look, he wasn't miles off saving us. Yes, okay, it all went pear-shaped at the end, but certainly in March it looked like he was going to do it. But the fact that his style of play didn't use a striker of such quality to his absolute best ability probably was Parker's biggest mistake, really. And it definitely seems that Marcus Silva has built this team around Mitrovic, and it's 100% the right thing to do. Before we come on to the second and third and fourth goals, Ben, we kind of need to talk about the response of Queen's Park Rangers. I felt like Fulham went into their lethargic 20 minutes towards the end of the first half. It feels like we have this lethargic 20-25 minutes in every game. QPR hit the post, and obviously in the second half we didn't start that fast either, and sloppy ball from Odoi ends up with Lyndon Dykes, who I know you think is a bit of a fraud, sticking it away. But I felt like we did obviously go on and win the game, and this part of the match will be glossed over, but once again we do seem to allow the opposition to have this 20-25 minutes where they can get their tails up, and more often than not it does seem to end up with the opposition getting a goal.
Yes, I think you're completely correct. I think Fulham often take their foot off the gas. I don't know what it is with us. We sort of have a really commanding opening 10-15 minutes and then we slow right down, and it's a bit of a concern really, because you kind of wonder if we sort of lack the tactical innovation to move the game into another phase, or whether it's just the fact that we're so content with playing football we know can hurt other teams that we sort of don't find the motivation to push on until it obviously someone hits us with a bit of a counterpunch. And I think this is why in a bigger picture, on a bigger message, is just that we really can put big teams to bed, but we struggle with small teams. I think the smaller teams, I think Fulham really at times lack a little bit of motivation to sort of push them aside that we know we can. And it's sort of like a little bit of complacency within the ranks. And I think that Fulham would be much better off if we actually use that sort of maybe nervous energy that we have, or the energy that's just been expunged, by actually going for that second goal to give ourselves more of a cushion. I think there are times where Fulham just almost become that dad on a Sunday night that has had a couple of beers and just wants to sit in the chair and not do too much. And that's like, we're 25 minutes in, lads, we need another goal. But I thought Rangers, towards the end of the first half and coming out for the second half, definitely put us on the back foot. I mean, yes, they scored a goal, and it's from our silly mistake. And I think a few more people might be more aware that Odoi may not come back into this team now. Kenny Tete is going to be fit in the next couple of weeks. However, I think they put us on the back foot, as I said, for a couple of minutes, and it wasn't until they scored that Fulham really looked to throw any sort of counterpunch. And when they did, I think obviously three goals in a matter of minutes, or two goals really in a matter of minutes, and then a third one to top it off at the end, really underlined the quality that we do have in this division. But also, it's just a glaring hole that obviously there's something going wrong there in the sort of like middle of the match, and we need to figure out why that is.
Tactically on it as well, just Jarman's touching it slightly. What I saw, I think that Marcus Silva really looked back on that Coventry game and tried to learn from it, because Rangers play a similar formation, that three back, the 3-4-2-1. And what I saw in the first half was a concerted effort from us to keep the ball out of central areas, especially in the middle of the park. I saw a lot of Seri and Harrison Reed, their first ball was often looking to get it out to the flanks because of the congestion that was caused against Coventry when it turned into chaos. And that was good, and it worked in the first half. And then Mark Warburton made a really attacking substitution at halftime. It was very surprised that he whipped off Dominic Ball and threw on Lyndon Dykes, which effectively left Stefan Johansson playing as a lone midfielder, because Elias Chair was dropped deeper, but he was not offering much in the way of out of possession. And this is where I don't want to whinge after we've won 4-1, but we've spoke about it. Me and Jarm spoke about it after the Bristol City game, of it just seems to take us 10, 15 minutes to adjust to in-game changes made by the opposition. And we didn't quite seem to cotton on to the fact that actually they were completely exposed in the middle. And it took us conceding to be like, oh, hang on a minute. They've got Stefan Johansson trying to run the midfield on his own. And then we just cut through them at will. So it was fantastic that we adjusted, but if we could have adjusted 10, 15 minutes earlier, we'd saved ourselves 10, 15 minutes of stress.
I mean, you available, Dan? You could be in the stands and just be a kind of alarm, maybe, just like, Marco, they've changed it. Do
it's
something.
Happened again. I think that one of the biggest turning points in the game was when they took off McCallum. I think it was, and they put on another centre-half and they pushed out Barbe to left wing-back. And you were just like, I'm not quite sure why they've done that, because Barbe was actually having a fairly good game at left centre-half. And when he moved out there, all of Fulham's midfielders and creative players just swarmed their back three and just completely left Barbe to be completely exposed at left wing-back. I don't know why they did that. I think it was literally like 2 minutes after they did that that we scored the goal. Second goal, yeah, because he gets subbed off on 66 minutes, and on 67 we score, and then we score again from exactly the same channel in the 71st. So I feel like although Warburton made a great substitute at half time and it really put us on the back foot, he then undid all that good work by taking off a left wing back who was, you know, stable, not giving us too many problems, but then putting a centre half out there just completely mismatched.
Jack, let's just come on to the second goal, which effectively swung the match back our way. It's a good cross by Niskins, but that header from Mitrovic is just glorious. And I feel like I've really missed that. You know, we've had some decent moments at the Hammersmith end since returning to football, but Mitrovic glancing in one off like that off the post at the Hammy end was just the best moment since, I think, since that Swansea game, all that way back in 2020, it really just felt like a moment for me where football has returned. Football is back in our lives, and it's all for moments like this. And yeah, 12-12 for Mitrovic. I know we just waxed lyrical about him a few minutes ago, but that is just talismanic Mitro at his best.
It's the perfect goal. A glancing header against your rivals in off the post. But I actually want to hop back 30 seconds before that, because Lyndon Dykes is suddenly getting away from Tosin Adebayo. Adebayo then comes across and makes the vital interception, which then gives us the ball back and which leads to the goal. So massive credit to Adebayo there, because we were on the back foot and I was thinking, oh God, Dykes is almost in here, but obviously Tosin recovers really well. But yeah, Cabano's ball, it's not perfect, but Mitrovic is so good at getting himself into space and I can't remember everything. It was Devise who came across. He just completely just palms him off and heads it into the corner. It's not even like the most powerful header. It's just direct and it's just gone straight in off the post. And it's just like that could easily just bounce out the other side, but it's gone inside. And the limbs in the Hammersmith end were the best I've seen since, you know, Mitrovic, you know, against Swansea. And, you know, it's a derby, and we were nervous because it was 1-1, and I was getting frustrated thinking we're going to drop more points from winning position. And that just set us on our way. And we were genuinely fantastic from then going on from the second goal. Mitrovic, I can't speak highly of him. He's just so good. And Cabano, you've got to give immense credit to Neeskens Cabano, who's had such a good season for Fulham. He creates so much. He's so direct. He's so good. And it's another one where Parker's just gone, yeah, you're off to Middlesbrough. Parker's got blood on his hands. I think Silva's just come in and just changed everything, and I just love it, man. I absolutely love it.
Yeah, there's a question here, and I don't really know if there's much of an answer to it, but it's a good point from Richard Smith. He says, what percentage of Mitro's goals would be lost to VAR in the Prem? Was there a foul on his marker before glancing the header yesterday, for example? Yeah. I honestly don't mind. I prefer football without VAR, but is it why he's great in the Championship? I can see the point, and I don't really think it's an obvious enough foul for VAR to pull that up, though. I just think it's a bit of poor defending. I just don't think you'd be able to shrug a defender off like that, and for the first goal in the Premier League. But I still believe that Mitro can cut it in the top flight, and I think still our first season in the top flight, where he scored 11 goals in 18-19, is still an indication that he can cut it at the top level. Look, he took a lot of shots to get to that statistic, but still, any striker that gets 10 plus goals in the Premier League for a struggling side is still worth their weight in gold.
I don't know if it's that black and white, to be honest with you. I feel like that's quite a black and white statement, where there's a questioner wants like a definitive answer, but I'm not quite sure there is a definitive answer. I can't even say the word definitive, which is mainly the issue here. But yeah, I don't think it's that black and white.
Yeah. The third goal, Bobby Decker Dover Reid. Interesting how we spoke at loads on the Thursday Club podcast about how, well, Decker Dover Reid and Robertson definitely shouldn't be playing, and then they go and get the third and fourth goals typically. That third goal, Ben, the ball through from Seri. I mean, I just didn't even see. I was there in the stand. I was like, what? I didn't even know that was an option that was on. It's eye of a needle stuff, and a great finish from Bobby. I know that he had his problems finishing against Reading in particular, and a lot of people were calling it into question, but I do feel pretty confident when Bobby Reid gets into those moments. We saw it a few times in the Prem as well, where when he gets one-on-one like that, especially from an angle, he tends to slot it away. It reminded me a little bit of the goal he scored against Liverpool as well. But it's all about the pass from Seri, isn't it? Just out of this world.
Yeah, it's a wonderful pass from Seri. I think yesterday he had a brilliant game. I think finally he's starting to turn some of the people that may not have come around to his good performances this season, like sort of get him on his side. And I think that yesterday really underlined the fact that the quality he brings in, as Dan said, the ball for the first goal down the channel and in the air is a brilliant one. His distribution throughout the game is so good. And I think it's been brilliant all season, in all honesty. I think he's sort of like half a yard, maybe half a step above a lot of the midfielders in this league in his ability to understand where the ball needs to go next and when. And this pass is one of them. It breaks to him. He has barely half a second to make up his mind, but he already knows he needs to thread the ball through that channel of the wing back and the centre half. And he does it expertly, lovely bit of weight on it. And then, as you say, Bobby takes one touch out of his feet and then bang across the keeper. And for us, Sammy, in the stand, looking down at it, it looks so easy. And it looks really, really nice in the replays as well. Great, like really nice, cultured finish from Bobby. And yeah, I agree. If you get him across goal, shooting into the far corner, you know, I think you can always back him on that one. It's just a shame that some of the other finishes he's not as good at. But I mean, for me, like a sense of personal vindication, because I bought a Jean-Michel Seri shirt 3 years ago when he first came to Fulham, and I have stuck it in the back of the wardrobe, and it's never seen the light of day since. But now I think I can probably get away with it down the cottage.
You have made some risky shirt purchases. You also bought a Joachim Andersen shirt last year, which was obviously, he was absolutely mustard for us last year, but it was quite a risky purchase.
Look, it was just a one player in the whole of last year that I really felt that I could get behind. I mean, like, I thought he had some brilliant performances. I think that he genuinely loved the club, I think, at times. I think had we not gone down, he would have been here for a very long time. I think it's just a matter of circumstance. I mean, I think I've spoken about it on Fulhamish before. I have a very bad tendency for anyone that I get on the back of a shirt tends to leave the next season. So I haven't gone for anyone on the shirt this season. And actually, that black shirt is too nice to print up, in my opinion. So we'll leave that one as it is.
Yeah. And then the fourth goal, there's not an awful lot to say about it, Dan. Nice for Robinson to get on the score sheet for Fulham. Broke well to him. Have we got much more to say on this? I mean, it's a massive deflection.
It's a massive deflection. I think one nice thing about it is that by that point in the game, Rangers had genuinely given up and Fulham players saw it as a fill your boot situation. Everyone was trying to pop up with a goal, which is quite funny in their big derby that it got to the point in the game where our team was quite literally just seeing if they could get their goal for the season. And I'm chuffed, and I think it's been a little bit of a rocky period for him. So injuries, little niggly injuries here and there, and then performances, he's been questioned. And rightly so, but I thought he was really good yesterday, and I thought it was a nice moment for him to get the goal and also to dedicate it to his upcoming child.
Yeah, a lovely moment. And I went mental for the fourth goal. Ben would testify to this, because I don't know why, but I had a moment of sheer genius at half time. I was chatting to Jack, not Kelly, Collins, at half time, having a pint. And just at the end of the half, just before we were about to go back up to our seats, I just went to Jack. I was like, it's going to finish 4-1 this game. I don't know why I did it. I just I don't normally do that, just suddenly come up with a random score prediction. And Jack and I even shook on it. And the last 10 minutes, and Ben will testify, I just kept saying, like, I just really want this fourth goal, really want the fourth goal. Just. And I got it, went mad, went way too mad, considering the moment that it was in the game.
The thing is, though, you've omitted one big thing from this whole agreement. You didn't bet any money or any pints on this result. So you were celebrating nothing but pride, which in hindsight, considering we went for beers after the match, probably not the best thing to do.
Yeah, I was a little bit upset that we then went to the pub and you said to Jack, "Oh, you owe him some beers." And Jack was like, "No." That's plain rude and disrespectful after the outrageous call that I made at halftime that was finishing 4-1. Anyway, we've got a load of questions to get through, but it's lovely to discuss a win. I just remember being in the same position 2 weeks ago after the 4-1 defeat against Coventry and just thinking, like, this is so shit. So it's amazing how football can turn on a sixpence.
I have to say, Sammy, that given it was an early kickoff and we won 4-1, I have to say it was really good to see all the fans in the Golden Line after it, or whatever pub everyone was at, just having a just in a good mood, having a laugh, having a sing song. And it was just really good after 2 weeks of, oh, I don't think Robinson's good enough, oh, Fulham are not going to get promoted, Marcus Silva's this, that. Like, it was the perfect way to respond to that horrible result in Coventry by the exact same scoreline. And I just think the Fulham fans are now back on side with everyone. And after the game, everyone was just in such good spirits that we probably just went all night long.
Fair enough. If that's how you spent your Saturday night, mate, then good on you. All right, we're going to take a break, and then afterwards we're going to get into your questions.
This is an advertisement for BetterHelp, a portal for finding online therapy. How's your social battery right now? If you feel a bit drained or lacking enthusiasm to meet all the social commitments in your life, then that can be a totally normal thing, especially with things picking up as we head out of winter. I know that pretty frequently a weekend just doing a few chores and watching the football was about the limit of my energy resources. But therapy can be a place to help you gain the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your batteries. Contrary to popular belief, therapy isn't just for those who have experienced major trauma. The overall goal is to empower you to be the best version of yourself. And if therapy is something you've considered, then why not give BetterHelp a try? BetterHelp is entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. They'll match you with a UK mental health professional with a wide variety of expertise. There's no referral needed, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge, giving you complete control over the whole experience. Fulhamish listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/fulhamish. That's betterhelp.com/fulhamish.
Part two of the Fulhamish podcast. Sammy James here. I'm joined by Jack Kelly.
Hello.
Dan Cook.
Hello, hello.
And Ben Jarman.
Hello, listeners.
All right, let's get into some questions then. Some fantastic ones coming through, so we'll try and get through as many as we can. Jaden says, should we experiment with other centre-backs alongside Tosin? An occasional rest for Ream is fine at his age. Dan, what do you think about this? I don't disagree, although rotating centre-backs is a bit like rotating keepers. You don't tend to do it.
Yeah, personally, I'm just not a fan of rotation at centre-back unless you've got issues. I think we've seen that so far this season, although we've not had much to compare it to, the best pairing we've had is Tosin alongside Tim Ream. And I think messing with that too much, just in terms of for the sake of rotation, feels dangerous. There will be games this season where we are going to have to rotate, but I think it should be kept to a minimum in areas of the pitch like that. I think they have a nice understanding with each other now. I think they've come accustomed to how the other plays. They're both very comfortable in possession, which is good. And so I think as much as possible, if we can keep them together, I think that's a good thing. The only flip side I'll say is that we do leave ourselves with this same issue again of, is Tim Ream a Premier League centre-back? And if it comes to that and he has a full season at centre-back, and instead we could have maybe tried to blood Alfie Mawson back in and see, is he a better or more viable option in the Premier League? That's a question that's probably fair to ask. But at the moment, if it's working, that's the key. And we've got a good partnership at the moment.
Yeah, that is definitely my concern going forward. And again, I'm scared to doubt Tim Ream because he's a nice guy and he definitely felt like he had that twinkle in his eye of, I don't know, I felt like he maybe has listened to a few Fulhamish podcasts where he said he's not a Premier League centre back and now I'm scared. So I don't want to call it either way, but it's definitely a thought process that's entered my head, that exact same thought, Dan. Bailey asks, I'll go to you on this one, Jack. He says, where does Tom Kearney fit into the team if Carvalho comes back firing and also with Wilson and BDR continue to perform? Obviously Wilson, I thought, was pretty effective in the 10 yesterday, didn't grab any headlines, but I still thought he had a good performance. How does Kearney fit into this team? Of course, made the bench yesterday. It's great to see him back, and we don't exactly know what kind of Tom Kearney this is now with a long layoff due to injuries, but yeah, how do you see him fitting in for the rest of the season now that he does seem to be back to some sort of fitness?
It's a tough one. It's a nice problem to have. Let's just say that. Let's start by saying that Ivan Caviar is probably going to be injured for the next couple games, let's just say. And if Tom Kenny's going to be in and around the squad, there's an opportunity there. Harry Wilson can drop into a 10, which is great, but I think his best position is probably out on the right. So if you've got Harry Wilson on the right, Cabano or Bobby D. Cordova-Reader on the left, then you've got that place in behind. So what I would do is, I think if Fabio Carvalho is ready to play, play the kid because he's wonderful and he's brilliant. Start embedding Kearney back into the team as a 10. Make maybe a substitution appearance on Wednesday or against Nottingham Forest. He seems to love a go at Nottingham Forest. So where does he fit into the team? I think in that 10 position, you know, if you've got like Seri and Reed behind him, he can flourish. But it's a nice problem to have. You've got a really good youngster in Fabio Carvalho who can create and he can score. And then you've got the wise head of Tom Kearney with his wand of a left foot who can just ping one from 25 yards out of nowhere and change a game. Yeah, just slowly, gradually get him into the team and then we'll see from there. We'll see what happens from there. I think that Fabio Carvalho right now is what we're missing, is that sort of in transition, obviously going towards the front line. And push Wilson out wide.
I enjoyed that. It's Daniel Mann, the commentator, isn't it?
No, it's not. It's Gary Weaver, and he did it yesterday because Bobby D. Cordova-Reed scored. And like, if you watch it back, it's Bobby D. Cordova-Reed. Like, he doesn't even mess about with it.
He says it twice. It's amazing. Yeah. He goes, Bobby D. Cordova-Reed. Bobby D. Cordova-Reed!
I was creasing, honestly.
Literally, I hear it every time now. I ever hear it on Sky. I just go, Jack Kelly, Bobby Deke would overread.
Just wait for the Jack and Joe show tomorrow, honestly. It's going to get rinsed.
We maybe need to title it the Bobby Deke would overread show. Ben, I'd be interested to know your thoughts on the 10 position. Me and you had a bit of a debate during the game yesterday about whether Wilson is effective as a 10. You like him there. I'm not so sure. I kind of agree with Jack that I think he's more effective on the right. So, yeah, I'd be interested to know your thoughts about this position.
I just like him in the 10 because I think that there's a certain element of creativity that he offers there that not really many others in the team can do. I kind of feel like because he plays a little bit more centrally for Wales, Welsh people, if you listen to this, please don't hound me too much if this is incorrect, that he could probably start to create stuff from the middle there. And I think that there isn't anyone really as good on transition in the team as Carvalho is, other than Harry Wilson. And I think that he obviously gives that incision, that little bit of burst of pace that maybe the wingers that play in the 10 don't. For example, like I like Bobby Reid in the 10, but I think he's too much of a ball to feet kind of guy, where I feel like Harry Wilson's a on the turn kind of player. And that's why I like him in the 10. I like that he can drift out wide into different positions and you can have Bobby Reid and him just interchanging if they wanted to, because I don't think we really want Cabano in the 10, to be honest. But yeah, I think Harry Wilson in the 10 could work. It's just, it takes a lot. It takes maybe like a few games for a winger to adjust to being in a more central position. And Harry likes to drift wider naturally anyway. But I like him there. And also I think because he's got a good shot on him and he also is good at like almost thinking about set pieces, that he could maybe create some chances there.
I mean, it's always just good to vary it up, isn't it? And I like the way that Fulham's depth can just keep opposition's guessing. And whilst it's not always great to rotate maybe your centre backs or goalkeepers, we alluded to the fact that Fulham just have so many options, so many different ways that we can hurt teams. And you know, Wilson can move to the 10, but now we've got Kearney back, Carvalho, maybe you can put Bobby Deckard over Reed, can literally play like a Kevin Betsy of the front line, just play him anywhere, the Swiss Army knife. So yeah, it's great problems to have. Dan, Elizabeth says, should we stop worrying about coming back from behind now? The wind was in their sails after the equaliser, but Mitro managed to pull it back with a cool and skillful header. I don't know, it felt different yesterday. It's the first time this season, and there's not really a graceful way of saying this statistic, but it's the first time that Fulham have managed to turn around a game this season. Either we've conceded an equaliser, we've never been able to then go back and score a winner. Obviously, we're still yet to get any points from a losing position. So yesterday was a little bit of a milestone. Do you think maybe yesterday could be a turning point of the road of actually Fulham at least can recover a situation, can recover a game? Because it did go in their favour and actually Fulham managed to turn it on a sixpence, and Ben alluded to the tactical switch that maybe helped us do that, but still mentality wise I feel like it was important.
No, I agree. I was sat a cup a few weeks ago after the Reading game on the podcast talking about this, should we be worried, and I said that it's one of these things that we just need to cross off as soon as possible so that the players have it almost as a muscle memory, as a confidence boost when we get into those situations. And I think we saw it yesterday. Our heads did go down after we conceded and there was some dissenting after we conceded. There was some fingers being pointed on the pitch. But when we got that second, the buzz in the team and we were just lifted. And I think that's important because we can now take that into other situations that we find ourselves in like that later on in the season. So I think it was important, and it may help with the situation where if we do go behind now in a game, that we just have that little bit more confidence of, hang on, look, we can get ourselves out of this situation. We've done it now. We know how good we are. And so I do think that it was just one of those things that we needed to cross off. And we do also need to cross off coming from behind and winning a game. But it's small steps. And I think it was a really important moment. And it could be a really important moment in our season, just getting that done.
Yeah, it feels like a landmark win. I mean, let's go ahead and probably get battered by the most out of form Cardiff on Wednesday. There's a couple of questions about the non-appointment of a director of scouting. If you haven't seen, Fulham have said via the Fulham Supporters Trust, and Peter Rutzler tweeted this last night about how Fulham have suspended the search for a director of scouting. It does feel like a bit of an odd decision. Fulham seem to simulate that they think things are going well at the moment, hence why they've put it on hold. We'll probably save some of this talking point for Thursday's pod, because we'll have Peter on and he'll be able to give us some more details. If you want to go read his article about it, just subscribe to theathletic.com/Fulham pod in the first instance, but you'll find the link on Peter's Twitter as well. But I feel like none of us will do it a mad amount of justice, because none of us really know the ins and outs about the director of scouting at the moment, so we'll cover that on Thursday's podcast. Final one from Lawrence Craven, that he says, is Joe Bryan's injury the most eye-watering thing you've seen at the Cottage in recent memory? He absolutely thumps the post. It really is one that just gives you goosebumps, and fair play for Joe. He actually managed to get a foot to it as well, which is the most upsetting thing. It could have been one of the greatest goal line clearances in history, but sadly didn't get enough on it, and then he absolutely smacks the post. So yeah, to the three of you, is there anything that comes to mind? The one for me is Thomas Radzinski's goal against Arsenal, where he scores at the far post and then he falls down the bank at the Putney end and absolutely smashes his head on the advertising hoardings is the one that comes to mind. So yeah, anyone with a suggestion here, Dan?
Yeah, I've got one. This is a memory from a long time ago. I was pretty young, but I have a memory of Antti Niemi being in goal for one of our games and coming out to the edge of the box to deal with the ball over the top and ending up landing vertically on his head. Yeah. And I think we had something like 11 minutes of added time in that game. And that is one of the worst injuries I've seen on a football pitch.
Yeah, it was horrible. I think it was against Watford on Boxing Day. I remember it distinctly, and you knew he was okay, but it was a horrible one to watch. Jack?
It's not eye-watering in terms of on the pitch, but off the pitch, it was yesterday. It was the Throff to Lager ratio in the half-time pint. I'm sorry. It just wasn't good enough. Someone put it on their Snapchat story, and I was thinking, that's for £5. That's not good enough. Sort it out, Delaware North.
I mean, it wasn't maybe the answer that that Lawrence Craven was looking for, but it's the best answer we ever could have. I mean, yes, and I totally agree. I totally agree, Jack. All right, slightly odd end of the question section there, but I enjoyed it nonetheless. All right, we're going to take another break, and then we'll look ahead to Cardiff on Wednesday. Part three of the Fulhamish podcast. It's Sammy here with Jack, Dan and Ben. In the break, I just said to the guys, is there anything I've missed in particular? And Ben just said, and I don't know any more about this. He said, Joe Bryan called me a coward yesterday on Instagram. So I didn't see this. I haven't seen this. So Ben, please explain.
It was this morning and I woke up and I had a little bit of a hangover, probably like actually a fairly sizable hangover. I'd been to the pub with you guys after the game and then I went home and had a few more beers and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, Joe put up the Instagram story being like, oh, the last slide is me getting absolutely rattled by a post or whatever he says. And then I said to him, well played yesterday. That last slide looks like how this hangover feels. And then he just replied saying, coward. So I've been absolutely done by my favourite ever player.
To be fair, getting an insult from Joe Bryan, he's like the James Blunt of like Fulham social media. It's like it's a moment of pride when you get insulted by Joe Bryan. His comeback to Harry Wilson, if you haven't seen it on social media the other day, is absolutely sensational. I don't know if any of you have seen this. So Joe Bryan posted an Instagram during the international break where he's on a boat and he actually drives the boat past the Craven Cottage. It's quite a cool photo. anyway, there's a couple of photos of Joe. Harry Wilson with the top comment says, watch that fringe, dot, dot, dot. Joe Bryan comes back, says, will do, mate. Would have invited you, but not sure your teeth would have fit on the boat.
Class.
Just sensational. I might make it my mission in the next couple of weeks just to keep commenting things on Joe Bryan's Instagram until I get a beautiful insult. That's what I want. And I'll frame. You should frame that, mate. You should frame that and put it on the wall in the nice flat you've got.
I think I might do, actually. Yeah. To be honest, I've always thought about how massive Harry Wilson's teeth were. I've always kept it to myself, so I'm glad Joe said it.
Other one from yesterday, by the way, that we didn't mention, Stefan Johansson back at the Cottage. Jack, I thought that the Hammersmith end gave him a nice ovation at the right moment in the match. Of course, it's a little bit of a weird one because he has gone to a near neighbour, but it's Stefan Johansson. We do like him, and I thought he got his nice round of applause, and everyone was able to kind of acknowledge what he'd done and then move on.
Yeah, it was like right at the end of the first half. He had a they got a corner and he came over and they clapped and then we went, oh, Steph. And we went, oh, no, let's probably not sing that because he plays for QPR. He actually could have made the interception to John Mikel Seri's pass to Bobby Deacord over Reed, but I think it just went under his foot or he didn't really go for it properly. And it was interesting to see him having some really friendly conversations with the players after the game. Understandable, of course, but if I'm a QPR fan, I would be furious at that. But it was nice to see him back.
Yeah, I thought a couple of people said to me in the pub, oh, did you think it was strange that Stefan Johansson didn't applaud the Fulham fans after the match? I was like, could you imagine the meltdown on Loft for Words if Stefan Johansson went round applauding all the Fulham fans after they lost 4-1? I think he was in a difficult situation. I think he did the best he could. All right, Cardiff on Wednesday. And Dan, to say that Cardiff have fallen off a cliff doesn't quite put it strongly enough. A 3-0 defeat in the South Wales derby today. They were already had lost 4 in a row before today. I'm a little bit worried about Wednesday now.
Yeah, it's classic Fulham, isn't it? It's why the podcast is called what it's called. But it's going to be a tricky one. I think their early season form was a bit of a false indicator, partially because they were winning games through set pieces alone. I mean, there was something ridiculous. I think it was their first 8 goals this season were all headers, which is the most Mick McCarthy thing you could possibly think of. And, you know, you look through their numbers and they're one of the worst teams in the league when it comes to pass success rates. They're one of the top teams in the league in terms of how many passes are long balls, most crosses, all of those sort of stats that you know that you're going to get from a Mick McCarthy side. And I think we've got to be wary. But I think the promising thing is that we've actually seemed to deal with aerial bombardment pretty well at times this season when we've had to. I think Tosin showed it, particularly against Birmingham. I think that was the key one when they really tried to target us with Lukas Jutkovic particularly. And he was a man mountain that day. And I think we're looking for a similar performance because we're going to be put under pressure from set piece situations. And if we can deal with them and then allow our technical quality to show on the pitch, then we should be coming away happy.
I guess, Ben, the fear in this game is Aidan Flint's knocking one in from a corner in the 12th minute and then them holding on. That is the fear. That's the way that you could see it going. And then it's just a really, really horrible match. If Fulham take the lead, I'm pretty confident that we'll get a few more because this obviously is a Cardiff side in crisis.
Yeah, I think I would agree with that. It's it kind of feels like the script's going to go one of two ways, as you rightly said. And Cardiff always had a massive massive threat from set pieces. And obviously they've got a manager and have had successive managers that love a set piece. So it's kind of, you get what's on the tin. It's like the Ron Seal of all championship clubs is old Cardiff. But I think like the one thing that stood out for me was that I was reading their sort of like championship review for the sort of like first third of the season, I think it was. Some guy called Sammy James wrote the Fulham one, so I thought I'd read all of it. And the guy gave Cardiff 3 out of 10 for the whole season. I think he said that they won their first 2 games and have won none, drawn five and lost five since then. So it's really a dire straits for them. And I think that it's either going to be the fact that they lost 3-0 to Swansea today is going to be the nail in the coffin for McCarthy, and he goes and we have to contend with a new manager bounce against a team that wants to impress a new manager, or Fulham are going to be the final nail in the coffin for McCarthy on Wednesday, and we boot yet another dinosaur out of football, and let's hope it's the last one.
Who's the last dinosaur we booted out of football?
I don't know. I can't remember off the top of my head, but you know, just dinosaurs out of football is always good for me.
Jack, your thoughts on Cardiff and their threats? I mean, there's not too much more other than Aidan Flint's head, but yeah, I mean, Kiefer Moore got a goal in him, hasn't he?
No, look, Kiefer Moore is the threat, especially up front. I watched a game today and Cardiff started okay. I think they had one chance, which was saved by the keeper, but apart from that, they were woeful. Nelson, Morrison, Flint, all at the back. I think they play something like five centre-backs and two CDMs or something for the last few games. They've had some injury crisis in somewhere, but I'm not too sure. I mean, Cardiff have been woeful, but their last game before the international break was against a Reading team who I think got like one shot on target in the whole game, won the game, and Cardiff battered them. So they were unlucky in that game, but today they were poor against Swans. I expect to wake up tomorrow to see Mick McCarthy sacked, honestly, after the Swansea game, given it was a derby, given they lost it in the fashion they did. But then again, it's a very sticky game. And if they come here and make it difficult for us and they, you know, like you say, get an early goal, it will get frustrating. But I think we have the talent and just the ball control. And I think we'll have the majority of the possession, even though we didn't yesterday. We'll have the majority of the ball and hopefully that'll be enough to break them down. And hopefully we see the likes of Fabio Carvalho come back into it as well.
Yeah, I guess from a Fulham perspective, Dan, it would be nice to get another player returning to the fold, a Kenny Tete or a Carvalho. There was a lot of questions again, you know, do you think this Carvalho thing's real? And we spoke about a few weeks ago that toe injuries aren't ones to necessarily take lightly. You break your toe and see how much you like it. But also the whole jam tomorrow shtick from the club with Carvalho, he's back next game. Next game he's back, is getting a little bit boring now. Just give us the facts. Stop saying he's going to be back next week, please.
Yeah, especially when you say before the international break, you know, we've got 2 weeks off. Oh, he should be fine after the international break, and then he's not. It is a bit annoying. But, you know, you do have to be careful with these things. And as I think it was Jarm said it last time, you know, especially with young players, you just got to be careful with them. But I think, yeah, it was great seeing TC back in the squad at the weekend. It was a shame he couldn't come on because of the injuries we had. So, yeah, it would be good on Wednesday if we could maybe see a bit of him. If we could have a Carvalho potentially on the bench, that would also be great. Just to see these players coming back. But the one I'm most looking forward to is when we finally get Kenny back. Kenny Tete is the one I'm looking out for.
Yeah, I guess maybe a Cardiff side with all of their big centre-backs with a few points to prove after Wednesday's games. Maybe not the one for nice, delicate TC and Carvalho to come back
keep
to anyway.
Up.
Maybe save them for Forrest the game after. I wouldn't be gutted to not see them get a run out on Wednesday. Well, we'll see what happens in that match. And that's all we've got time for on the podcast today. It's been really, really great just to get back to winning ways and for us all to have a smile on our face on the podcast. And hopefully you had a smile on your face listening to the podcast too today. Ben, final thing we need to do is name the podcast. So what would you like to go for?
I'm going to go for It's Happened Again, because I had such a great time singing It's Happened Again. Again and again yesterday. So yeah, It's Happened Again is the podcast title.
It's one of those chants which it doesn't even really make an awful lot of sense, but I love it every single time, and it can only work in this specific situation against QPR. And one day the run against them will end, but the longer it continues, then we can keep doing that It's Happened Again chant, and fingers crossed we can do it at Loftus Road or the Kai and Prince Foundation Stadium, as it's now called, later on in the season. Well, thank you for listening today, and thank you to my guest Jack Kelly. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Sammy. Thank you.
I hadn't realised it'd been so long since you've been on a pod. What an excellent little win run you've got there. Liverpool, then QPR.
No, I was actually on it for Reading at home when we lost. I was just saying the last win I've been on the podcast was Liverpool away. Sorry about that.
So maybe your run isn't that good. I still have I've yet to see Fulham lose this season, actually, which is a nice thing. Oh, actually, speaking of, I meant to mention this earlier. A couple of people saying, "Can I sound the horn today?" I have a new rule for the horn, and I thought maybe I should put down the ground mark for the horn. We have to be A, top of the league, and we have to B, win three in a row. If that happens, then the horn gets played. But until then, no more horn. Okay, I feel like I have to. I'm not playing the horn.
Play the horn.
No horn. Top of the league, three in a row. They're the new rules. Dan Cook, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me, Sammy.
And Ben Jarman, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Sammy.
Well, you don't need me to say this, but have a fantastic start to your weeks. Come on, you Whites.
You Whites.
Doodles.